Disrespect will take you places you can't get to from here. Disrespect entertains with a look at the challenges and sometimes the successes of people with disadvantages and disabilities who have had taken from them or have been denied the full choice of possibilities to affect for the better their own lives or the lives of those about them. Disrespect is taking the rest of the summer off, but we'll be back in the fall. We're here today with two interviews from the recent past. You know we're facing an election in the fall in the province of Ontario. We ask you to think, I ask you to think, about who you're going to vote for and to make sure that you do vote and that we don't suffer another term of this kind of story because we will be running them again in 5 years if we do. You don't want that. This week we revert briefly to the present for some sad news from last week. Baby Alexander died, as predicted, in Sick Children's Hospital last Friday at 7:05 p.m. The cause is, at this point, unknown. Sick Children's is the hospital where the sickest children go for care. It seems to be the hospital where most children with trisomies, 13, 18, 21 and others, are unlikely to survive. Disrespect welcomes Tom Pearson to the show. He's a spokesperson in York Region for Put Food in the Budget campaign and the chairman of the Poverty Action for Change Coalition, or PAC. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I read your article in the Star, Food Supplement Needed Immediately. It sounds a little more urgent than most people's take on the problem of poverty and food. I gather that you think that government is impoverishing people on fixed incomes, from what you said.
Well, that's part of it, and they seem to have lost us. There doesn't seem to be a sense of urgency either.
Right.
You know, I've been at this for a number of years now, and I'm just finding that people are more desperate than ever at this time than they've been. So, you know, for a government in a time when they've announced they're going to be creating poverty reduction strategy, I just, you know, I'm at a loss to see it.
Yeah.
It's very discouraging.
Well, you mentioned that the Star had pointed out the current adult rate for workfare is $585 a month, not enough to buy food and pay the rent, let alone other basic necessities. Now, you've indicated this is worse for people with special medical conditions who may or may not be on disability benefits.
I mean, if you think about trying to live on $585 a month to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'd be lucky to get a room for $350, $400 a month.
Right.
If you're lucky. So, you know, it's already leaving you less than a healthy food basket of food would cost you a month.
Yeah.
So let alone when that's without a phone or without clothing or without medicine or without transportation to get medicine or transportation for anything. So it's the people are already at a complete disadvantage. So what's been happening is they've had a thing called a special diet that people could apply for over and above that $585.
Right. So
that's kind of been a small safety net for people, if you will, to be able to apply for that. And it could be anywhere from $22 up to a maximum of $250. They could have a number of conditions that would result in them having to have that much extra to be able to eat.
Yeah.
And people might have, for example, people will have allergies, just regular, normal, everyday foods that people take for granted that they can eat. You're not going to be able to access that on $585 a month.
Yeah.
When 70% of it has gone to your rent.
Yeah. Well, for instance, corn allergy is very common, but so are corn sweeteners. How are you going to stay away from them on $585 a month?
And this is it.
Yeah.
what they've said is that special diet is not sustainable. And so they haven't announced officially that they're eliminating it, but they're announcing that they're redesigning it and recalling it. What they're doing is they're launching it under another name. So they're eliminating the program completely, and they're going to relaunch something else called I believe they're calling it the nutritional supplement.
All right.
And so what they're doing in a sense, though, is they've already said that they can't, that it's not sustainable.
Right.
So that tells you that they're going to cut. So it's a cut. So really what they're doing is they're going to eliminate many of those people that are getting the special diet. So, you know, a number of those people who may qualify for disability support but just have not applied for that or have not been accepted through the whatever hoops they've had to jump through to get it. But now they'll be cut off from getting their special diet, so they'll even be in, you know, worse shape than ever.
Well, they may have misled me. It wouldn't be the first time they've done so, but they tell me that the special diet won't be cut off for people who are on it, but the people that it's cut off for are the new applicants, the people who need it just as badly.
Well, you really have to look at their words carefully.
Yeah.
When they've said something is not sustainable.
Right. Well, the reason we talked about this, it's not the special diet program that's not sustainable. The whole system's not sustainable because of the lower levels of income that they provide.
Even, minimum wage. Try surviving. Recently, there was a call for people working on minimum wage, a CBC documentary. You know, they couldn't find anybody that was just living on minimum wage. Because it's impossible.
Oh, I see.
It's virtually impossible to live on it unless you're... You know, you're bunked up with a whack of people. I mean, you try living on $400 a week minus taxes in this day and age.
It's just,
you know, so to get $10 an hour as being supposedly this big accomplishment that's happened, $10 an hour minimum wage, try living on it.
I have a friend who works for a large foreign-based department store and makes $12 an hour, and it's just, you know, it's just not enough.
No, and that's the thing. When my father came over to this country as an immigrant years ago, a newcomer, they would call him now, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, he came here. He had five kids. You know, not when he got here. He had one kid, one child when he got here. But he, you know, he was sweeping floors. And he was able to save up enough money from that job sweeping floors to buy a house, to get a down payment and actually get a house.
Yeah.
With five kids and one person working. Yeah. Whatever happened to that?
Yeah.
You know, the situation now is such that since the 90s, when Harris made those cuts in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
we're actually in a worse position. Those people on welfare, low-income workers, and ODSP, people on disabilities and pensions, they are actually in a worse position today than they were when Harris made those cuts. Because when he made those cuts, he made 21.8% cut way back in 1995.
Welfare cuts, yeah.
And yes, and since that time, you've essentially had a cost of living raise most years, and then actually this year,
this new government has made their poverty reduction strategy
their big thing. They gave 1%, which isn't even the cost of living this year.
I don't think there were any cost of living increases during the Harris years.
Well, since because McGuinty came in and no cost of living increase, and as you just mentioned, you're still actually further behind now than we were with the Harris government. This is what people don't seem to realize. People are in worse positions now than they ever were.
Yeah.
And there's no comparison to when people were kids and they go their experience as kids living in poverty. It is not the same anymore. People are having to access just the basic necessities such as food at a food depot or a food bank. Back then, you know, they didn't even exist. Food banks came out in the 70s. It was supposed to be around for a couple of weeks. Now it's become a reliance. Whatever happened to being able to put food on your own table?
Yeah.
Without having to, the dignity, losing your one's dignity of having to go and essentially beg people for food, for clothing, for a roof on, to keep a roof over their head. This is just disgusting what's happened to this country.
I understand there's 5% food inflation so far this year, and the year's not done. So this 1% increase comes nowhere near to meeting the inflation needs.
A loaf of bread has gone up a dollar in the last year. Do people realize that? I'll bet you the people most aware of that are those that got the 1% increase from $582 to $585 or whatever it is a month.
Yeah.
You know, now they can buy, what, an extra loaf of bread?
Yeah, yeah.
That's essentially what they gave them. They gave them an extra loaf of bread a month.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, the cost of that loaf of bread has gone up. you know, they've not kept up.
I think I mentioned to you the figures that I have are from 2009. They talk about the increase in the number of people who are accessing EI in 2009. Well, do the math. Those are the people who are dropping off the other end of EI in 2010. And if the increase in 2009 was 100%, then the increase in people who've fallen off it in 2010 is 100%.
Sure. We've had, like, food bank use has been, you know, most food banks will tell you that there's been an increase in food bank usage of about 50% in just since 2001 or so.
Yeah, and it's
that's
still
a lot of people.
It's still increasing. I volunteer at the Sally Ann, and they're doling out 800, 900 sandwiches a night now in Hamilton to homeless people.
The meal programs.
Who are on the street, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's 800, 900 people every night who can't feed themselves.
Exactly. And we see the same thing. We have the churches that are putting on the, you know, they call it a community dinner, you know.
Yeah.
And it, you know, it's an interesting idea, but you know what? People would rather be able to put that dinner on their own table and have a family dinner. They don't want a community dinner. They want to have a family dinner with their own family, and they want to pick the food they would like to eat that their kids like, you know, and they don't want to have to go and access a place to access food, you know. It's just wrong.
Well, we have figures here based on the change from October 2008 to January 2009. Now, I realize these figures are over a year old, but things haven't gotten better in the meantime, and the number of EI beneficiaries climbed 103% in that time, which is about 4 months in Windsor, 96% in Kitchener, 83% here in Hamilton and in London.
Wow.
So those are the people, they have already dropped off the EI rolls. Those are the people who are thronging the soup vans and the soup kitchens in our cities. And more of them fall off the EI rolls every day.
And they expect, you know, what it comes down to for many people, is impossible choices, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like only 17% of Canadian families have access to regulated child care, for example.
Yeah.
So what are the other 83% supposed to do that can't afford it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, they have to rely on something. Something has to be in place to help them.
Mm-hmm.
During that time, because you can't just not have someone looking after your kids.
Yeah.
But they expect everyone to be out there working. But yet there's nothing in place for that. And then so when they have to fall into a situation where they need assistance, they have to beg for food, you know?
Yeah. And you mentioned you've done a social audit that showed that these people are being humiliated every time they want their needs met.
Yeah.
What was that audit? Who was it for?
Well, there's the ISARC social audit. It was done right across Ontario in different communities. Each sort of area can.
What does ISARC stand for?
ISARC is it's an interfaith social audit. So it's all the faiths.
Yep.
And what they do, they've been doing social audits across Ontario for a number of years, I believe, since 1987. And so every 4 or 5 years, they do a social audit. An organization will host, and you'll organize it in such a way that you have people living in poverty from experience coming in and telling a panel, and it's rapporteurs, we call them, and you try to find people within those communities that are highly and widely respected,
okay.
And they listen to what's going on in those people's lives.
Right.
And then everything is recorded. You kind of break it all down, and you take out quotes, and you relate those quotes to social scenarios, and it's like a social audit, so you're able to break it down and get into the nitty-gritty of the areas of what are specific areas where people are being affected. And one of the biggest things that jumped out was the way people are being treated. Just to access a program, to access, even those are on ODSP that go in for glasses, for eyewear, for example. There are certain eyeglass places that treat people on the government ODSP system like I'll just say garbage. You know, they just don't treat them well.
Yeah.
And you know, and then they'll go into another place and get that kind of same treatment at a dentist's office. I've had a woman sitting there getting a root canal done.
Right.
So the dentist stopped halfway through to phone to find out if ODSP would cover it. When he was not able to get an adequate answer, he simply sewed up the woman and sent her on her way.
Really?
She ended up in the hospital in critical care.
Really?
And nothing's ever done for it because, you know, she can't afford a lawyer. She can't afford lawsuits. She has no idea about how to go about anything like that.
Yeah,
and this woman's lived a nightmare.
The workers are very smug about this. One worker told me when I went in to get eyeglasses, I said, well, I volunteered for 10 years, and I've always gotten a pair of glasses for my volunteer work as well as for wearing on the street. I said, because my needs are different when I volunteer. I work at a computer. I need glasses for working with the computer, middle focus glasses with the middle focus on the top where the distance usually is, and reading on the bottom for my research material on the desk in front of the computer and the microphone. And she said, oh, we don't provide second pairs anymore. I said, do you want the feds in here, tearing apart your paperwork and asking if this is discrimination? She says, I've told you what you can have. I said, yeah, well, I've told you what you're going to get. And I am. I'm going after them.
Now for mid-interview break, Bill Johnson, another one.
Just ain't so bad. Of course, it depends on whether you're north or south of Saturday night. The warm stones of the city streets of San Patricio stay with me long after dawn, long into the night. Charlie, take my keys and
another area that Canadians are we're terrible at. Did you know that over 40% of Canadians with disabilities are not in the labor force here? We rank like 27th of 29, countries. We're 27th in.
I think it's dawned on the feds. I don't know if it's dawned on the province yet. With baby boomers growing older and all of them facing disabilities, and to imply that this means you exit the workforce implies a tremendous loss of income for the government. And I think the feds have caught on to that.
Definitely. They write people off. But that another example, let me give you another quick example. One of our longtime members is in a wheelchair, and when he was walking, he was a hardworking guy, and he really misses that, but he can't do that now. But one thing he can do is he can DJ, and he was really excited about the prospect of DJing, and I was able to get him some work in that area, but we couldn't get him home.
Yeah.
He's got an electronic wheelchair, and in York Region, if you're in that situation, you can't get home past 10:30 at night. They don't have anything. So if the guy wanted to go to a wedding, or if he wanted to work, or if he wanted to just go out and enjoy himself, and not have a curfew like a little child, he can't even do that. And this is something that people don't realize. It's isolating people. And he said to me just the other day, he said, Tom, now I know what you mean about the mental health. I go, what do you mean? He goes, I know what you mean by that now. He's just had it. He doesn't have the energy to make 6 phone calls to get a ride somewhere and to go to the hospital and access this and go over here and do that and this. He's one person, but this is happening over and over again to people. We have to set the things up so that people aren't living in constant crisis here.
Yeah, that's true. I don't think people know what it feels like to be dependent by law. You have to have your assets reduced to $500 worth of liquid assets before you even qualify for workfare, which is where even people with disabilities start. They start on workfare. So before they get disability benefits, if they get them, they get workfare. And maybe they don't ever get off workfare. But to get workfare, they have to have liquid assets of less than $500.
I know people from a social housing aspect, one-third of whatever you're making, that's still what they're going to be taking for your rent. You likely wouldn't qualify for a housing anyways if you're single, because there's no social housing for singles in Ontario. There's very, very little. You have to be either have kids or be a senior. Other than that, you're looking at most places at 12 to 20-year waiting lists.
Yeah. Well, I was on the waiting list in Toronto for 17 years, and I finally told them to stop it.
Yeah. 17 years?
Yeah.
Wow.
A problem, too, with subsidized housing that I've only recently become aware of, and that's if you earn income, they take 50% of the income that you've earned, but it goes against your rent subsidy. Because you've earned the income, your rent goes up by a third of the money that you've earned. Never mind, they take 50% of it. And then you pay tax on that money, too, which you don't on your fixed income.
Right. Yeah, so that's what I mean. Even if you make more, they take it anyway.
Yeah.
There has to be a system set up wherein it makes it so that people can get a little bit ahead. What's wrong with someone being able to save $50 a month? I mean, people aren't even able to do that. It's just a minefield and impossible choices. That's what I call it. People are asked to make impossible choices. Do I pay my rent and keep my roof? Do I lose my phone? Does my kid not participate in school because I can't afford to send him on the bus?
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't have any busing, because we're 1.8 kilometers away instead of 2.0. But my kid is not willing to walk the hour to get there in the winter.
Yeah.
They have to make it so that there's not impossible choices for people. It's not asking too much, I don't think, for people to be able to put on their own table their food, to pay their rent, and to have clothing on their backs, and maybe to even be able to go out every once a month and go to McDonald's or something like that.
Certainly,
aren't even able to do that anymore.
For the kids, they've got to take part in the other programs that the kids at school take part in. But if those programs are underfunded and the school has to charge, that automatically means if your mom or dad is poor, I'm sorry, you're left out.
Kids are already left out.
Yeah.
Those kids are already left out, where the schools particularly asking for uniforms for the school team and And there are kids that are just too embarrassed to let them know, look, I don't have the money, you know, so they just simply don't go. And that's not a stat that shows up anywhere, believe me.
Yeah, that's true.
But, and the same with the transportation. These kids that just stop going, you know, that doesn't show up anywhere as any particular reason. But, you know, it's, again, because they didn't have the first of all, they didn't have a bus. Secondly, they didn't have the funds to access the local transit each day to get that kid to school. These are little things that don't show up on all of the stats, but they're adding up. And you know, I don't know if you heard about the sick report, but you know, the longer we keep people in poverty, the more billions of dollars it costs us. So we'd be much smarter to be setting up systems that are what I call step out programs. You know, it help you know for those that need to be permanently on the system, we set it up in such a way that yes, they can be on the system and still not have to beg and borrow each month. And for those that are looking for to give back, we can set it up so that they're able to do that and give back and maybe make some income from that, particularly ODSP people. And we can set it up where we have systems that help people step out of the situation they're in, that they want to change and move forward. We can set it up so that they're able to do that, you know. Right now it just seems to be programs come out of nowhere with no thought. They don't come from the ground up, which they should. You know, I attended a Pan-Canadian Poverty Conference a couple of years back, and one of the big things that I got out of that from places like Quebec and Nova Scotia and that do much better with poverty than Ontario ever would even dream of. But they're one of the things that came out of that was most of the successful community programs came from the communities themselves from the ground on up. So they were essentially the people came up with them. They came up with the ideas and the programs and what the needs were for the community. And it came that way as opposed to the top down where, you know, you get a regional government or a city government or a provincial or federal saying, okay, well, we're going to give you this, you know. But really there's been no input from the ground up. So, and I'll give you an example of that, is a very, very low-income community in Montreal. I think it was Saint-Denis. I'm not 100% sure. But they had Cirque du Soleil there, one of the buildings that were in that community, and they approached Cirque du Soleil about a program for, you know, people in that low-income community that would could train them to, you know, be part of it. And it came from a discussion like that to being a big program that now kids and people from that low-income community have become Cirque du Soleil people. And,
oh, yeah.
And you know, something simple like that, but it came from the community on up. They saw a need. They saw something that was part of their community. They approached them, and lo and behold, now it's a long-running program that's reaped unbelievable benefits for those people.
Yeah.
I don't know if we've become less caring or if we've just, we're just not paying attention to others around us anymore or what it is, but I was actually very surprised that our politicians have not done more than they've done, knowing what they know. Because they all, for example, we did the math with all of the, we've gone right across Ontario and had the MPPs do the math.
Right.
We asked them to do the math, figure out how much would it cost someone on, you know, on the lowest of incomes to survive. And virtually all of them come up with a number that's somewhere, anywhere between $1,200 and $1,500 and $1,600, we'll say.
Yeah.
But yet, you know, yet they expect people to survive on $585.
Yeah.
But they do the math themselves. They figure out rent. They figure out the phone. They figure out. So then they have then we ask them to go back and say, well, what would you have to do then? You'd have to eliminate what? So you'd eliminate a phone. You'd have to eliminate TV. You'd have to eliminate.
News for you. That's already eliminated for most of us.
Yeah.
You were talking about health costs for people who were denied the things they need to remain healthy on these benefits, Tom.
Mm-hmm. By just allowing people to wallow in poverty, if you will, without doing anything about it, we're actually ending up costing us billions and billions of dollars in health care costs.
And to your mind, this sells to the conservative constituency? Cleese, for instance, bought this?
Well, this is what I was saying. Cleese had said to me, you know, how can I sell this to a boardroom? How can I sell this to people?
All right.
You know, just giving a raise.
And did he buy what you said?
How can I sell that? And that's when we come up with the idea, well, we'd have to sell it in a business form. They understand facts and figures, right? So let's do it in a, let's sell it in a sense that, look, How can you afford not to do anything about it? It's going to cost you billions and billions in health care costs if you don't. And here they are.
Yeah.
And we've begun to sort of list them.
Diabetes is epidemic, for one thing.
Diabetes, it's a good example. And much more prevalent with low-income people.
Yeah. Starch,
much more prevalent.
Starch and sugar, yeah.
Sure. I mean, what can you afford? Can you... what can you afford to eat? You're gonna can you afford the bag of Cheesies, or can you afford the healthy snack?
Mac and cheese, yeah.
You know.
Yeah, and, wiener, high cholesterol wieners.
But one of the biggest things that that everybody could do better, and I mean everybody, one of the biggest things that everybody can do better is treating people with a little more dignity and respect. You know, believe me, people don't want to be in the positions that they're in. Most people would rather be doing something constructive to help other people and living in dignity. You know, people don't want to, for the most part, be cheating a system and just siphoning off of it. In my experience, those are the exceptions, not the rule.
Yeah.
But our system is set up as the rule,
yeah.
You know. And one of the biggest things that came out of our social audit that affects people is the way people are treated at every turn. And I think everybody can do a better job there, from the doctors to the social workers to the even the program workers. I mean, imagine put yourself in someone's position that has to rely on all these things, that has no choice, and may have been very proud and too proud to ask for help in the past, but now has had to, been forced to.
Yeah.
You know, put yourself in that position. I mean, it's. The problem, I think, is people have this predisposed notion of what people on low income are, and they can state that a lot of them there's an old stereotype of them. They're all just lazy and they deserve it, you know.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, it couldn't be more the opposite. In most cases, these are people that care. These are people that want to be contributing. These are people that are that have children. They have families. They want to contribute. And they're just looking for a way to. And that's what we should be doing, is we should be providing ways that they can.
Instead of denying them the inclusion in our society.
Sure.
Yeah.
They want to be included. They want to be doing something. They you know, virtually throughout the social audits, we heard that from almost everybody. And most of the people were either homeless or on ODSP or on welfare and low-income workers. But literally, I mean, that really resonated with me. It was something that was sincere coming out of everybody. No one wanted to sponge off any system, and no one wanted to be in the positions they were in. But circumstance happened with people in life, circumstance of health, circumstance of situation. The longer you're in, you chip and chip and chip away at people's self-esteem, and mental health becomes an issue, and it just goes downhill from there. So, you know, we need to assist people, let them know that they're welcome and they're contributing members of society, and that we still love them, you know. Stop treating people with such disrespect. It's mind-boggling to me.
Yeah. Well, you've hit on the name of the show, which is disrespect. We spell it with a capital R to emphasize the respect that needs to be shown to people who become disadvantaged and want to get back to the way that they were when they were self-sufficient. I appreciate your time to comment on this on the show. Your letter was impassioned, and the interview's been impassioned. Was there anything that we forgot that you would like to add before we go?
Well, I'd invite everybody to do the math. You can go to www.povertywatchontario.ca.
Right.
Or www.dothemath.thestop.org.
Right.
And also, upcoming is October 17th, which is International Day for the Eradication of Poverty.
Okay.
So organize an event in your area, and that's the day that was given around the world. It's an internationally acclaimed day where it's a day to give a voice to those in poverty. So what we do is we set up a stage and a microphone. We allow anybody who'd like to come up and speak out against poverty can. And then now we now have musicians that come out and perform songs they've written specific to the issue, and now we have rappers coming, and it's just it's a growing sort of event. But you can start one of those everywhere, and it's just that one day of the year where the concentration is on that. The International Day for the Eradication of Poverty. It's a voice to those in poverty, because quite frankly, I don't hear enough of them out there, and there needs to be more.
Appreciate that. Okay. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
All right. Goodbye.
Bye.
Archie Gillis, Hungry Headlights.
Trees for nothing. Let's chop them down and sell them to the man. What do we need clean water for? Nothing. The water's gonna fall when it rains. What do we need clean air for? Nothing. Evolution will give us all we need to breathe. What do we need this earth for? Nothing. Walmart gives us everything we need. Make a dollar, we are the pimps of Mother Earth. Well, she provides for us, we treat her like a whore. But what is worse is all this shit we're buying and selling, it'll all be in the trash on Tuesday. Now we're feeding food to our cars like no one in the world is starving. But hungry headlights trump those hungry eyes on this road to hell that we're driving. For nothing. Let's chop them down and sell them to the man. We need clean water for nothing. Well, water's gonna fall when it rains. We need clean air for nothing. Evolution will give us all we need to breathe. What do we need this earth for? Nothing. Walmart gives us everything we need.
Disrespect welcomes to the show the Civic Engagement Coordinator at the Stop Community Food Center in Toronto, Jonas Schein. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jeff.
Now, we're looking for an update on what happened in Hamilton prior to the holidays. You, or at least your group, visited Hamilton and engaged a number of people in the community, including a politician, on the subject of the adequacy of fixed incomes in your campaign, Do the Math, which is on the website of the Stop.
Right.
How'd it go?
Jeff, it was really an amazing event, I think, on December 4th. I remember I wasn't feeling very well in the morning, physically I wasn't feeling that great, but the energy from everybody who was involved and the passion there, it kept me going throughout the day, so... That was pretty outstanding.
It went well. When did you arrive, and who was there?
I boarded a bus here in the west end of Toronto. We shared a bus with some folks on the east side of Toronto, and we packed that bus, and we drove down. We left the Stop at around 9 in the morning, got to Hamilton about an hour later.
Yeah.
And when we got there, I'd say it was about 100-plus people in the Welcome Center there.
Okay.
Our friends in Hamilton at the Social and Planning Research Council hosted us, and the day was coordinated by the Social Planning Network of Ontario, and a lot of folks for that, for sure.
All right. How'd you strike up the link with the Social Planning and Research Council? They're not exactly invisible, but they are a Hamilton organization.
That's a good question. I guess... not sure how far it goes back now, but however we first connected, I know that Hamilton has been quite organized on the issue of poverty reduction and that they have a round table there. The Stop where I work, we launched this web-based tool called Do the Math last June.
Yeah.
There's a lot of postcard that goes with it, and Hamilton's been really involved in that campaign, and so I've been in touch quite a few times over the last several months.
Oh, good. I had no idea. In what ways has Hamilton been involved in that campaign? Tell me about it.
Okay, well, let me explain the campaign first of all.
Yeah, sure.
So, you know, the kind of the origins of the campaign come back from probably from 2 Junes ago. And it was a time when the current provincial government was doing their consultation process, and our community, which is one of the lower income neighborhoods in the city, was excluded, was not one of the chosen neighborhoods for consultation.
Right.
And we thought that was a shame, and so we decided to set up our own meeting, and we actually invited the chair at the time of the Poverty Reduction Committee, her name was Bill Matthews, to our community, and she, to her credit, she came down to hear from people in Davenport West. And there was a moment at the end of that meeting where there was a community member who stood up, and she was on Ontario Works at the time, and she sort of asked the minister straight up, she said, who's setting the rates for social assistance and what criteria is used to set the rates? And the moment of silence, or rather awkward moment of silence.
Right.
And, Mr. admitted at the time that there was no, that the government of Ontario does set the rates, but they don't actually use any criteria to set the rates. They're not based on any market cost of living.
Oh.
And so we thought, you know, this is, I mean, we already knew this in some ways, but we thought this is ridiculous. It's time that the government does the math on what it costs to live in this province, because obviously they don't know if they think that income security programs that are as little as $572 a month are enough to support people in Ontario.
Right.
So the Do the Math website asked people to consider what it costs to live in a month, not to be the most generous, not to give the most generous estimate, but a realistic estimate of the cost of living with, you know, health and dignity are our two main criteria.
Right.
And if you go through that survey of a monthly budget, and then the web tool allows you to compare that to the actual cost of living.
Right.
And they don't match up very well.
No, they don't. Do you have any more accurate measure of what the projected figures people are putting in and what the actual figures that come back, how they differ?
Yeah. So on December 4th, we released our latest results. We were able to keep track somewhat of the information that people contribute. And as of December 4th, we've had 3,000 people do the survey online.
Right.
And they estimated that healthy food, minimal, or the cost of all expenses was people needed minimally $1,490 a month to pay
right.
for a living.
Right. Yeah.
More than 2.5 times the monthly income currently received by a single person on Ontario Works, right?
Yeah.
The $1,490 was the average compared to $572 currently for a single on Ontario Works. And it was like just over $1,017 for single person on ODST currently.
Yeah, I don't think anybody could call $1,490 an extravagant figure either.
Not at all, eh?
No.
Anyway, so in terms of what Hamilton was doing is, part of the work we've been doing, too, is to actually meet with MPPs, and we've been trying our best to set up meetings with MPPs in different communities, because we think that people are going to run to be a representative of a community. They should make sure that the most vulnerable people in that community have enough money to, you know, provide for themselves and their families and to contribute in a positive way to their neighborhood. And so we ask people, when we meet with MPPs, we ask them to do the math and to ask to tell us what they think it actually costs to live with health and dignity. And so I know that Hamilton was quite active in meeting with MPPs over there and getting them to actually do the math.
You had a lot of them do the math?
We've done, I think, we've had about 25 MPP meetings to this point across the province. So, you know, local people, I don't meet with all those MPPs, but the people have set up those meetings.
But you mentioned in Hamilton a number of MPPs showed up.
Yeah, you guys have like 4 MPPs, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Is that right?
Well, I'd be hard-pressed to do it because they keep changing the boundaries of the constituencies.
Right.
But I think of Hamilton Center, Hamilton East, Hamilton West. There are several ridings on the mountain. And then you get further east, you get into, I don't think anymore there's a separate riding for Lake Stoney Creek. I think that's about it. Maybe half a dozen.
Yeah, so Hamilton has been pretty active. over there. While I remember, I think I should give you guys the address. So if your listeners want to visit the site, they can do that. And it's www.dothemath.thestop.org.
Dothemath.thestop.org?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Much appreciated. So do you figure you were, I get the feeling that you figure you were a success in Hamilton. What kind of outcome do you hope for?
Well, you know, the reason we were going to Hamilton on December 4th was that it was the one-year anniversary of the government, of Ontario's commitment to, or the announcement of their poverty reduction plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so we thought it was important to mark that day.
Yeah.
And, you know, some positive things have emerged from that. Some things have emerged from the plan, but, you know, sorely lacking has been any action on social assistance, in particular for adults on social assistance.
Yeah, I gather it took them a year to appoint people to a panel to examine poverty.
Right, and that was part of it. At the time when we planned the event in Hamilton, there was still no sign of the social assistance review that they promised a year earlier.
Yeah.
I was able to attend a couple of the consultations in Toronto that they did, and certainly the ones that I was at, people voiced their concern about, you know, how horrendous social assistance rates were. And so when the announcement came out a year ago in December, there was nothing in it really for adults on social assistance at all. And I think that they felt that they had to say something, and so they did make this commitment to review social assistance, right?
Yeah. This is a technique I'm familiar with now with this government, that they're trying to drag it out to the point where when they come to the next election, they don't have time to implement any improvements to assistance, but they can give us a promise. If we reelect them, they'll promise so-and-so and such-and-such. And I'm not feeling good about that, especially about the year delay in setting up a panel.
Yeah, that's not promising at all, right, when it takes a year just to put together a panel, right? That's a year in which I know people in our neighborhood went without a lot of things, right?
Yeah.
Kind of food that they needed to be healthy. People got sick, people died, you know, from not having the things they need. And so that's quite shameful, right?
Yeah.
You know, I think it was unfortunate that it took a year for them to begin their review.
Yeah.
Because it hasn't begun yet. They've just announced that it will begin again. and I think there's cynicism is shared by people, right? But, you know, in some ways, I think the programs need to be reviewed because they just don't work. And there's a lot of things that can be improved, right?
Yeah.
And that's part of what the Do the Math tool tells us, right?
Yeah.
So that, in fact, if there was, you know, if they wanted to help people and make sure that people were getting access to things like healthy food, they would, in fact, take immediate steps. And that's why we asked for an immediate $100 increase.
Yeah. There's been no feedback on that, though. Not yes, not no, not we're thinking about it, nothing.
Yeah, you're right. There hasn't, I mean, there's been feedback in individual, like off the record, meetings with MPPs.
Okay.
But no, we haven't heard anything officially.
Yeah. I had one, I get my dental work done in Burlington, and I had one dental assistant say in Burlington that she thought things had gotten a little better. And I didn't even ask her how. I said, no, they haven't. And she says, well, a little better. I said, look, I don't know what you're talking about, but if somebody hits you on the head every 5 minutes and then they change to hitting you on the head every 10, have things gotten better, you know? I said, it's people like you that make sure that things will never get better. She was kind of quiet after that. But I wasn't too pleased with the upper middle class perspective of the situation of people on fixed incomes. And somehow the issue seems not to have penetrated enclaves like Burlington, Oakville, Markham. I don't know why. And yet I know there are activists in those areas who put those issues forward. What do you plan to accomplish with the Do the Math program in the coming year? You just more visits, more traveling, more expense for you to engage people face-to-face and politicians across the province, or what?
Well, I think we're trying to do a few things, right? One is to raise awareness with the general public.
Yeah.
That I think there are people, you know, there's so much damage that's been done in terms of stigmatizing people on social assistance over the last 20 years, and that the general public, I think, really believe that companies on welfare are getting generous sums of money. That is, you know,
to the point where it discourages them from working.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, anybody who does the math would have a hard time sticking to that.
Yeah.
Belief. And then,
yeah.
And then I think, you know, or that people aren't really going hungry because the food banks, for example, are stepping in, and you know, food banks, you know, they're an emergency, you know, last resort, but they're certainly not making anybody food secure. They provide a very minimal amount of food.
You're lucky to come away from a food bank with meat of any kind. Yeah. And you and I discussed before the interview the information that I've got, but I haven't yet substantiated that food banks in Hamilton, at any rate, are qualifying people according to a newly stringent interpretation of the rules and excluding people with disabilities. I hope to do an interview on that by next week.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you are going to be traveling the province in the new year? Or at least your advocates are?
But we're trying to build our network of people who are working on a campaign to put food in the budget, to ask for an immediate $100 increase as a healthy food supplement for people on social assistance. And I think one of the things we need to look for now is that if this, you know, as the social assistance review happens, that one piece of it, that the terms of reference have to include setting social assistance rates in a realistic way based on what it actually costs to live, right?
Oh, that makes sense.
It's not acceptable that we have a social assistance review that doesn't look at benefits that reflect the real cost of living, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So people,
spoke, for example, like in Hamilton, Ted McMeekin, you know, I think folks met with him, and, you know, he saw that $100 wasn't actually enough to add to Ontario Works and ODSP, right?
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, part of the Liberal government, but he said he couldn't support the healthy food supplement yet because of the need to go through the proper channels, like basically through the social assistance review.
Yeah.
And, you know, so in Hamilton, you know, it's going to be important that people, you know, engage with Mr. McMeekin now and say, well, the review's on, you know.
What's on?
That the social assistance review has been, you know, re-announced. So that it's,
all right.
And that, you know, $100 isn't enough. I certainly agree with that.
Yeah.
But it's not okay to wait around any longer, right?
Yeah. Well, that's a good point. And maybe several people listening will pick up their mouse and search out Mr. McMeekin's email, or better yet, put pen to paper, which always makes an impression, and write him and congratulate him on his observation and ask him if he won't intervene to push the initiative forward. People who want to take part in your effort to attract more advocates and reach more people across the province, is there a way that they can engage with the STOP to do that?
For sure. I mean, I think the first step would be going to the DeepMath website itself. And so that's www.dothemath.thestop.org.
Yep.
You know, this is part of the Do the Math is something we developed locally in our neighborhood, and
yeah,
our neighborhood-based organization. And so, you know, most of our focus is on organizing here.
Yeah.
But we are one of the partners on this Put Food in the Budget campaign.
Okay.
Coordinated by the Social Planning Network of Ontario.
Okay.
And, the best thing to do, really, is to get involved, is to contact the SPNO.
Okay.
Because we're looking for people to organize in their own communities.
All right. Right. Like you have.
Yeah, exactly.
Social Planning Network of Ontario.
But in Hamilton, I think people are listening in Hamilton, which I assume they are. It would be good to contact the Hamilton Research and Social Planning Council.
Social Planning and Research Council in Hamilton, yeah.
Yeah.
And possibly even Deirdre Pike there. Okay. Was there anything else you wanted to say before we let you get on to other things today?
No, thanks, Jeff. It's good to talk to you.
Yeah, good to talk to you and to review that progress is being made on the many fronts, both for your neighborhood, which needs it badly, and across Ontario, modeled after your efforts. I think that's exciting.
Yeah.
Thanks, Jonah.
Okay, Jeff. Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Take us out, Bill Johnson, habitual survivor.
just to get that precious dime. She used to have a child, she couldn't look after it. Social worker took her, now she don't know where she's hid. She's a prisoner of the powder, she can stand the pain. She don't need no one beside her.
If you can't access a Disrespect broadcast, you can now listen to the show wherever you're near an internet download. Disrespect is archived at www.radioforall.net. That's the number four, not the word, radioforall.net. You can find the shows under its name, Disrespect. Tune in at showtime to see if something more topical hasn't displaced the show that we planned. Disrespect is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.